We've been overtaxed on retrenchment. Joining us now is Patricia Williams, tax dispute expert at Bowmans and chair of the SAIT Tax Administration Workgroup. Well, good evening, Patricia, and thanks for joining us this evening. I've never heard of somebody being overtaxed on retrenchment. Is that something that happens?
It is something which seems to have happened for the last while. So it dates back to a guide and possibly the behavior of SARS before this guide was issued around July last year. And this guide, in telling employers how to fill in the application for a tax directive when people are retrenched, spoke about whether something was voluntary or involuntary. And what was slightly unusual about that is that the actual tax legislation doesn't use the word voluntary or involuntary in the whole definition of severance benefit. Now, a severance benefit is something you get if you're being, for example, retrenched, or if you that's for your employer getting rid of several different people, like a whole group of staff at the same time. So not one or two, if you're actually doing a whole scale reduction of staff or of a certain category of staff, or if you're perhaps ill or incapacity, or if you're over 55, then you get the severance benefit. And the great thing about that, your lump sum that you get when you leave employment in those circumstances, is that you get the first R500,000 tax-free. This is a once-off benefit. And then, of course, all the amounts above that, also you pay tax at a reduced rate. But that's only if they qualify as a severance benefit. Now, SARS's guide last year said that if there was something like a voluntary retrenchment, if you ticked voluntary on the box when applying for tax directive, they didn't apply these special tax rules for severance benefits. Now, the problem with that is that sometimes employers, when they have to make retrenchments, they actually offer people the choice to take a voluntary package. Now, of course, no one voluntarily gets retrenched, so you might take the package because it's better, because you accept it, and in any event, you know you're about to be retrenched. You know what the rules are. Maybe it's like last in, first out. You know you were the last person appointed. It gives people who are about to retire or who have other options or who know they're going to be retrenched anyway a sweetener, bit of extra money to take the package. But if you're going to be taxed more, no one would ever accept this package. So this is the concern, that the guide spoke about this voluntary or involuntary. And if you ticked voluntary, you would be, in our view, incorrectly taxed. Now, that was something we actually raised. So SAIT, assisted by various people in their working groups, did an application to SARS about this. And to their credit, SARS very quickly responded and said, yes, they see our problem. They accept that there's an issue with this guide. Mm-hmm. And they actually told us, in the meantime, employers, please just tick the involuntary box, because that way you'll get the right tax treatment. But then the question arises, what about the people who've been taxed wrongly in the past?
So let's just stop for a quick minute here. So it really has got to do at the end of the day with being voluntary retrenched or involuntary retrenched. That's really the treatment here at the end of the day.
Yes.
Now you know, and as you rightly pointed out, I mean, nobody gets voluntarily retrenched, so then it must be involuntarily retrenched. But the tax treatment between these two things are quite different. Is there not maybe now a legal case between a company that has retrenched individuals and have gone and potentially not given them this advice?
So that is a problem, but of course, employers generally, you have to follow the tax directive that you're given from SARS. And if you're given a guide telling you how to apply for it, most people will simply follow the guide. Mm. They wouldn't necessarily stop to think that maybe the guide is incorrect or results in an incorrect application, even though it was intended well. And so maybe everyone should already have ticked the involuntary box because it's a retrenchment. But the problem is, often these agreements will say like voluntary retrenchment on it. This voluntary retrenchment is actually something not in tax law, but in labor law. And it shows that you get something extra for agreeing to, essentially for waiving your rights. You're not going to sue for the fact that you're not going to challenge that it was a fair dismissal. Mm. You're saying, okay, we don't have to go through the whole longer process. Mm. I'll just take more money now, and then we won't burden the courts. It's a very effective commercial thing.
So let's make this practical. John gets retrenched. Does it really matter now if he's retrenched as part of 100 people that got retrenched, or is it okay if he got retrenched on his own?
So if you have something that you'd often call it a mutual separation agreement, when you just decide that you and your employer are going to part ways, this is not a retrenchment per se. Even if people call it a retrenchment, this is not the kind of thing that qualifies for a severance benefit. But if your division is closed down, or if you're over 55, or if you your services are terminated because of incapacity, it could be ill health, other incapacity, then you qualify for the severance benefit. The difficulty for employees is your employer applies to SARS for the directive. Your employer does this, gives you your RP5 certificate. They deduct the tax, and then you actually, when you go and submit your tax return, it's pre-populated with whatever your employer put on there.
Right.
So if in the past, based on the guide that SARS issued last year, the employer had followed and you'd been overtaxed, you wouldn't even know it. As far as you're concerned, they deducted the right tax. Then you put in your tax return, it's pre-populated with your RP5, and you're like, okay, well, that's over. And actually, people need to know about this. If they've been retrenched in the last 12 to 18 months, they actually need to take a second look at their RP5s. They need to get a tax practitioner to look at those RP5s and see. And there's special codes. So if you see a code, now I know that people won't necessarily remember, but of course, when you talk to your tax consultant, they'll also look at that.
Where do you find this on your RP5? So I mean, that's the other question.
So next to the amount that you get is a source code. It's four digits.
Okay.
And then next to the employee's tax that they deducted, so the amount of tax that was withheld, is also a code there. So if you were really retrenched, so you should have qualified for the favorable tax benefits of severance benefits, then you should be seeing a source code 3901 for your income. And you should see, for the employee's tax, you should see 4115. So if that's what you see, probably you were taxed right. But if, in contrast, you see source code 3907, which is an other lump sum benefit, an other lump sum code, and doesn't carry any benefits, and if your employee's tax has got a code 4102, then probably you were incorrectly taxed and you need to talk to someone about it, a registered tax practitioner, and see if they can help you get this fixed and try and get your money back. And if you think about it, let's say you're at the, maybe not the very maximum rate, but even if you look at 40%, I know nowadays it's more than 40% tax that we pay, but 40% tax on R500,000 is already 200,000 rand. So losing just that benefit's already over 200,000 rand. And when you've been retrenched, you can't afford to be overpaying your taxes. You really need to get that money back.
Now, I know a lot of people say, look, I do my own tax. You know, I don't need a tax practitioner, you know. But they potentially now are going tonight looking at their final RP5 and they see that the coding, 3907, and then the other code, which is 4102, and then obviously a lot of them are going to say, well, you know, this is now clearly, I potentially, you know, become eligible for something like this.
Yes.
If they had to speak to SARS directly, how would they, is there a specific procedure that they would follow for something like this, Patricia?
So mostly, if you've already put in your tax return, then you would now actually have to object or request a reduced assessment. And SARS, of course, can in theory help you object or request a reduced assessment. Sometimes they're, you don't always get the same level of service when you go in to talk to SARS. If they aren't able to help you, it really is worth, for this kind of thing, to talk to a registered tax practitioner. But one of the problems, and not just for individuals in these circumstances, but anybody, if you realize there's a mistake on your tax return for a past year, it's a real issue because SARS doesn't let you object more than 30 business days after your assessment. So if you realize a mistake like the very next year doing your tax return, there is no easy way to get that fixed. For objections, you have to show that there are exceptional circumstances. But something that's quite important here is that one of the categories of exceptional circumstances in the Tax Administration Act is when SARS has provided incorrect information in an official document. And in my view, in my legal view, this guide that SARS issued telling people how to fill in the tax directive was the provision of incorrect information. And so on that basis, you can say, even though I'm late, you should be considering my late objection and processing it anyway. So it's something we actually plan to engage with SARS. Through SAIT, we're going to be contacting SARS again on this point and seeing if it's possible for SARS to allocate someone to deal with it, or a central area, certain people being at SARS being dedicated to deal with this, hopefully. In terms of the Constitution, we've got the public administration. One of the criteria of public administration in terms of the Constitution is that people's needs must be responded to. Now, I don't know how big a problem this is. I don't know how many people are affected. Mm. Is it a few hundred? Is it a few thousand? Mm. We don't know. We had a lot of retrenchments in the last year and a half. Mm. So it's possible that there could be quite a lot of people. And so it may well be worthwhile for SARS to set aside specific people to deal with it. And so far, they've been very helpful on this matter.
Well, I mean, that was one of my questions, was going to say, do you know how much money is involved here? I suppose the other question, just maybe just to end off with, let's assume you do fall in this category and you now do hand in your revised documentation to SARS. How long does this process take for you to get your capital back?
So there are certain rules for how long SARS is supposed to take, and sometimes it can be extended, but normally it doesn't take longer than about 60 working days. So up to about 3 months would be a perfectly normal time period for SARS to deal with this and try and get it refunded to you. So they'd have to process your revised assessment and issue the revised assessment and then issue your refund. If it's taking longer than that, you might want to look at it and see if there are any particular problems. And also, you know, we do have a problem with delayed refunds the last year or so. There have been issues. Sometimes you need to go and talk to the tax ombud then.
Well, that was a very interesting conversation about tax. Remember, this is Patricia Williams. She's a partner in tax at Bowman's. If you fall into this category, maybe have a look at your RP5. Remember, you're looking for the codings 3901 and 4115. Those would be the correct codings. If you see anything like 3907 or 4102, you are probably and potentially, you know, eligible. Potentially speak to a tax practitioner there then about this. Patricia Williams, partner at tax, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Kirby.
This is-